T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Overnight America. Here we are. One last hour tonight. One last live hour tonight. The show starts Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Can you believe it? Overnight America is starting 2 hours earlier. And I'm excited for it. We'll be on the eve of a big Game 5 with the Cardinals and the Braves in Atlanta. First pitch is 4:02 Central, which you'll hear pregame starting a few hours before. I'm sure at 2 o'clock with Mark Reardon, they're going to be talking all Cardinals all afternoon. So you're not going to want to miss it here on KMOX. And man, I can't wait for that. We'll be on right after the game on Wednesday night. I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know if people will be going crazy. I don't know if they'll be sad. Who knows? I'm hoping that Yadi could do it again. I'm so pumped up seeing Molina get excited over games like this. I want to welcome a guest in a couple of minutes. His name is Dean Reuter. He's an author, and he wrote a book with a couple of different researchers about the hidden Nazi. Yes, a Nazi book. Well, World War II, Hitler had a specialist on his hands. He had someone that was designing the concentration camps, but on top of that, he was also someone that designed the rockets and their development into their weaponry. And this person has been long forgotten in the history of everything. He was captured. They say he committed suicide. There's some questions about that for sure. Maybe there was a cover-up involved. But how come we don't know about this Nazi general? Well, you're going to learn about him. And author Dean Reuter wrote a book called That Hidden Nazi, which we're going to get to in just like 5 or 6 minutes from now. We'll have an interview with him. It's very fascinating. And it's amazing how things could be forgotten with time. You know what surprises me, too? There may be a reason why we're forgetting this. There was a survey that was done, and you may be surprised how many millennials have no idea about what happened in Auschwitz. Now, if you were to do just a flat-out survey, and you would talk to any given person that would be my age or younger and say, well, tell me, when I tell you Auschwitz, what comes to mind? Can you tell me what you know about it? How many millennials do you think answered that correctly, or at least a little bit correctly, as in they get the gist of it? They might not know all the details, but they know its significance in World War II with the Nazis and the concentration camp and the atrocities that happened there. You may be surprised to learn that 2/3 of American millennials have no idea what Auschwitz is. 2/3. 2/3. That's a large number, 66%. So only 12 states have an actual mandate for Holocaust education in secondary schools, and it could go by district to district. Like, you're in the state of Missouri. We're not on that list. We're not one of the states that have mandatory Holocaust education. Here are the states that they have, okay? And I only found 11. They said 12 states. I only found 11 that had it. California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Oregon. That's 11. Another state that may be joining, that's Massachusetts. I don't see why here in the state of Missouri we don't have that on the books. Do they even teach the Holocaust in schools today? I don't know. Maybe that would be a topic for another day. But they're starting to look at how this is handled in schools. A quarter of millennials aren't even sure they've heard of the Holocaust. 25% don't even know if they could answer that question. What was the Holocaust? 41% think that fewer than 2 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust. The number is closer to 6 million by all accounts. Anti-Semitic assaults continue to rise in the United States, and they think part of it may be the lack of education here. We have 50 states, only 12 or 11 or so. We'll say 11 right now. Could be 12 if Massachusetts joins in. Actually have something on the books that say it's part of their curriculum. That's a shame, isn't it? So one person, for example, that they quoted in Massachusetts, this is in Oregon. Claire said this: before the mandate, my school's Holocaust education was one poorly put together slideshow. There are districts in Oregon where students get zero Holocaust education. Imagine how many students have gone through those districts. And do you think that they take it on their own account to understand these things? It's like the same thing that happened during September 11th. If you're a senior in high school, you're 18 years old, considering that September 11th happened 18 years ago, you'd just have been born at that point. And you sit there and they start to talk about the events that happened on September 11th. And what do the students say? Some of them say, oh, I thought that was out of a movie. I didn't know that really happened. I had no idea. It's almost like the Titanic. They'll say, oh, I thought that was just a movie. I didn't know that really happened. That was a historical event. It was that movie was based off of. Wow. Yeah. Oh, there was an actual ship called the Titanic. Wow. And some of these tragedies that have happened in American history, forgotten. Because they just don't teach it. Isn't it a shame that they don't teach the Holocaust in schools? Wow. That is really shocking to me. That needs to change. It really does. So whatever that may be, maybe we can get Missouri on that bill. And I know there's a lot of people that are looking at it as a factual historical event. There was one instance in Florida. Now, Florida's on the list, by the way. Florida is one of those states that actually mandate that they teach it in the schools. There was an administrator that went out there and said that, you know, he couldn't talk about it as a factual historical event, which, you know, you're going against the grain there. But let's get Missouri on that list. It's not a bad list to be on. All the lists to be on, that's not one you want to keep off of. Coming up next, author Dean Reuter, he wrote a book called The Hidden Nazi, and what a fascinating tale. And as they start to dig deeper into the history of World War II, and as they find out some of these characters that have been long forgotten, they shouldn't be. And you don't want to forget about the terrible atrocities there. In this case, there's one person that was responsible for a lot that really has never been talked about until now. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now is author Dean Reuter, of General Counsel, Vice President, and Director of the Practice Groups of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
So happy to be here, Ryan.
So your new book is called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. And you decided to look at this and investigate someone that may be considered a ghost, because there's not a lot written about this one in particular person you focused on the book, and his name was General Hans Kammler. What did you learn about him, and what really tipped you off to try to, I guess, really investigate him to begin with?
Sure. Again, thanks for having me on. The Hidden Nazi, the book, is basically a story about this man, although it has several other storylines developed within the book. But Kammler is a particularly nasty guy, even for an SS Nazi general, and a particularly powerful man. He helped make the Holocaust possible, which is really an extraordinary thing to say if you think about it. He really was the personification of evil, but he was also ruthlessly powerful. By the end of the war, he not only had worked on the Holocaust, he ruled all of Germany's secret weapons, including the infamous German vengeance weapons, the German V-1 and V-2 rockets, the revolutionary jet aircraft, all their special munitions, shaped charges, even nuclear research. But nobody has written about Hans Kammler because, reputedly, at the end of the war, May 1945, according to his driver, he committed suicide. So nobody's chased him or his record. In the fall of 1948, a German court, even at the request of his wife, had him adjudicated dead, declared him dead, and history has just forgotten him. And I got involved in the project through a couple of researchers whose names are on the cover of The Hidden Nazi. When they approached me, really, to do a collaboration agreement, they had found each other in a World War II forum online. I knew one of them. I was a lawyer. He knew me to be a lawyer, so he asked me to draft a collaboration agreement so those two researchers could share information. And, you know, they started feeding me information bit by bit by bit and got me intrigued in this story. It just seemed impossible to me because it sounded like fiction, but it's nonfiction.
When you started to look into all of this, was his primary role in the war for Germany just to create weapons?
No, I mean, he was trained as an architect and engineer, so he had an undergraduate degree, and he had a PhD in engineering. That was his training. And his first projects during the war were actually pretty benign. They were, you know, a telecommunications network, a police test track, a lot of buildings, some infrastructure, basically civil service projects. But when the Holocaust began to ramp up, he's the guy who actually designed the concentration camps. He's the guy that helped pick Auschwitz as an expanded concentration camp. So he was expanding the concentration camps that already existed, making them bigger, building new ones, really laying out the structure of these camps, designing the standard concentration camp barracks even, and then involved in installing the gas chambers and the ovens. And I don't mean just from some bureaucratic distance. He was doing this on a day-to-day basis, moving as a dust cloud was his nickname. Staubwolk was his nickname during the war because he was so active moving from one site to another, demanding changes, barking orders, demanding his orders be followed, even shooting his pistol in the air to get greater activity from from his subordinates and from the slaves that he ruled over. So that was the final horrible thing he did, was rule over Germany's slave labor trade. Then he turned. It was only then, near the end of the war, that he turned to the weapons.
Wow, and it's amazing. You wouldn't normally think someone that's designing or an architect would be someone that they would also trust with something weaponry, missiles, things like that. How did he really gain the trust, and why did Hitler love him so much?
That's a great question. You know, in Nazi Germany, there's this division between the party people and the non-party people. There were the straight military people who Hitler really didn't trust, the people that preceded him, the entities that preceded him, his ascendants, Hitler didn't really trust. So Kammler was an ideologue. He was a Nazi party member, but critically, he joined the party even as Hitler was just rising to power. So he was in on the ground floor. He joined the SS, the dreaded SS, the Schutzstaffel, just as Hitler was coming to power. And then he came up through the Luftwaffe, which was the German Air Force. Mm-hmm. That was an entity that Hitler basically started. It didn't exist before Hitler. So Kammler came with this just unbelievable record that gave him credibility because he was an early adherent to all things Hitler.
Wow. Author Dean Reuter joining us now in the new book's called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. So when we look back at World War II, there has been a lot documented. And were you surprised to find that someone with this much prominence inside the Nazi party, the person that was orchestrating, putting together, and really had his hand in a lot of the weaponry, were you surprised that this person's name was long forgotten?
Ryan, I was stunned. As I said, the researchers brought me this project and they started feeding me this information. I didn't believe it. I thought they either didn't know what they had or they were looking at the documents incorrectly. It doesn't make sense that somebody so powerful and so wicked could have escaped attention. But it's because he committed suicide and nobody tracked him down. Now, in doing our research, we've discovered that he didn't actually commit suicide. Mm. There's much more to the story. So it becomes not just a biography, but a real sort of mystery and thriller. That's what The Hidden Nazi is as a book.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people say that about Hitler. There's that conspiracy, like he really escaped. And, you know, there's people that post photos or they like to try to understand what would have happened if, you know, maybe Hitler didn't die at the end of World War II. What if he went on to live a life hidden somewhere else in another country? So I was going to ask you the same thing. The whole suicide, the motive of that seems to be something that has spurred a lot of people, at least in modern days, to look back and see if that really happened. Before, I don't know what the mindset was in the 1940s, if people were just very trusting or if they just took it as, you know, they had to have done something like that. But it seems like now, in hindsight, a lot of people are looking back and trying to do investigations into what happened during World War II. There's probably a lot of documents for you to go back and look at, too. And I'm guessing some of them from the U.S. government has been unclassified or at least have been released in recent years that have been helpful.
Yes. Yeah, there was a big push to unclassify or declassify lots of American records. Some of them still remain classified. There are documents that the government agrees concern Kammler that were produced in 69 and 1987. So, you know, almost 40 years, more than 40 years after his reported death. These are documents that concern him that the government still won't produce to us.
Wow.
Through Freedom of Information Act
still.
Requests. Yeah.
Wow, that's remarkable.
But we did find, I mean, the documents are in an unbelievable state of disorder. You know, the World War II was the largest undertaking in the history of mankind. And it's almost like at the end of the war, everybody just put everything in boxes and moved on. And there have been lots of attempts to organize things and categorize things. And a lot of documents now are digitized and you can find them online. But you never really get a great sense of what's missing, what's in the box that you're not seeing. It's very difficult to do research into the era and feel comfortable that you're looking at everything.
I've heard people mention that at the time, of course, they weren't worried about the record keeping. They were worried about winning. So that's why a lot of this stuff, it takes a long time and a lot of research. And it's amazing how many government documents have just gone unnoticed after the years because, you know, if you think about it, you know, they're now just declassifying some of the Kennedy assassination documents over the most recent years. And you can go back and eventually they'll put these things out in sort of chunks. And it's remarkable because you even go back like, Lyndon B. Johnson and Nixon tapes. We still haven't even listened to all of those. And it's been decades and decades and decades after the fact. It takes someone with a passion for it to go back and look into it. The Hidden Nazi is the name of the book. Author Dean Reuter joining us here, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. So what's America's deal? What portion of the story does that come in?
Well, we've talked briefly about the weapons. At the end of the war, Hans Kammler was in charge of all of Germany's secret weapons. As it was known, Germany was going to lose the war. Their territory's contracting. Everybody realizes there's going to be this mad scramble for all the technology. The Germans were way ahead in terms of rockets. And whichever country got the rocket team would thrive, would win the Cold War, probably. Everybody knew the Russians were going to be the enemy of the United States. It's our the thesis of the book that Hans Kammler, and we have him writing orders, two orders to move the rocket team to get them out of the way of the Soviet Union, basically hand deliver them to the United States Army. We know the rocket team came to the United States. That's pretty well known. A couple hundred of rocket scientists, including Wernher von Braun, got here. Mm-hmm. But what's not known is that it was Hans Kammler that really hand-delivered them in an attempt to save his own skin.
Wow.
Where the story, the idea of a deal sort of falls apart is, well, why did he commit suicide then? But when we know, when we're the only ones who know, that he didn't, in fact, commit suicide, the idea of the Kammler deal, as we call it, makes a lot more sense.
The book is called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil, and author Dean Reuter. He is someone that put a lot of work into this, and it's a really fascinating thought that there's a person so involved in the Nazi Party with so many atrocities under this person's control that went unnoticed, in fact, forgotten over the decades. That, in fact, there's a lot to learn about what happened with General Hans Kammler. We'll continue our conversation with the author next on KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Renker. Have you ever heard of General Hans Kammler, a monster of World War II? The book about him out now by author Dean Reuter is called The Hidden Nazi. When I was looking at some of the different things that you discovered in your book, The Hidden Nazi, I realized that and you mentioned this just in your last answer, that Germany and the Nazis were very close to getting the bombs. So nuclear weapons were much further along with the Nazis than we could have ever anticipated. And what would have happened then if, let's say, that technology, they were able to develop it faster than us, and what would have happened in the course of World War II if that was the case? Because you look back and you realize that if their missiles were as strong and devastating as we go back and look at it now, that would have been a real game changer in the entire war.
Game changer is the right word. And the missiles we talk about in the book are mostly the V-1 and V-2, well known. There's a lesser-known rocket called the Americo rocket that the Germans had in a stage of development that was designed to reach the eastern seaboard of the United States. So New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Boston, all within range of a Nazi missile. And when you combine that with the progress they were making on nuclear weapons, game changer might not be a big enough word.
It's hard to theorize what would have happened in World War II, but you talk about how this may have been something that would have backed the United States off. They would have been scared to approach at that point if they would have known just the amount of firepower that the Germans had. And that would have been an unbelievable. I can't imagine what would have happened and how that would have shaped the world if the United States didn't become involved like they did when they did in World War II. I mean, that game changer might be an underscore based on what we know now. You know, what's interesting, too, about some of the back when we look back, it's how some of the Nazis, in fact, even were used here in the United States after the war, like in NASA, for example, in our space program. So when we look at some of the weaponry in the United States, is there a chance that we may have taken some of that technology and used it for ourselves?
Oh, it's a certainty.
Yeah.
This is the rocket team that Kammler delivered to us. Wernher von Braun and others came to the United States. It basically became NASA, and it was them that got us on the moon and helped develop our ICBM. In fact, there's an old Bob Hope joke, and there's a lot of truth and humor a lot of times, but Bob Hope's joke was, we got to the moon, the Americans, we got to the moon first because our Nazi rocket scientists were better than the Russian Nazi scientists.
Oh, wow. When I look to and the way history is rewriting itself, it seems like when we start to learn about some of these things, and your book called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil, author Dean Reuter. By the way, if people want to check out this book and the work you've done, where can they find it?
I said bookstores everywhere and on Amazon tomorrow. It debuts tomorrow.
So exciting.
You can order it tonight on Amazon and probably still get it tomorrow.
Isn't that amazing how Amazon works? You can order something and get it the next day.
Like, yes, it is.
Do that all the time. It seems like they're on top of their game. Next day delivery is their goal. And it's amazing
Absolutely.
How fast you can get physical copies in your hand. Amazon.
Yeah, and you can, of course, get it at bookstores. So.
Oh, perfect. We have great local bookstores here in St. Louis, too. Okay, so Hidden afterwards. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about General Hans Kammler is that the Fourth Reich, was he someone that was trying to organize another rise with the Nazis?
Yeah, this gets into that area of fiction that you talk about where people, some conspiracy theorists are pushing this idea. But we, in doing our research, found concrete evidence of a meeting of German high officials, Nazi high officials, government officials from the German government, and German industrialists in the fall of 1944. So, 8 months before the war ends, these folks are meeting, and the whole purpose of that meeting was to instruct German industrialists to take all their technology, all their raw gold, ship it out of the country, get it off the Reich, and preserve it for later. And it's pretty common knowledge that a lot of Germans, not all Nazis, of course, but there's a huge German population in South America and Argentina and some other countries. We also found a 1953 CIA report that expressed alarm at German enclaves in South America that were extremely well-funded, that were full of technology, full of scientists, and looked like, the groundwork for the Fourth Reich. And, we also see concrete evidence of individual Nazis making their own exit strategies in the months before the war ended. Everybody knew Germany was going to move, going to lose, rather. So it's only natural to think that they were going to make some sorts of preparations to survive and maybe even thrive. Mm. And if you take the long arc of history, if you look back to World War One, most of these senior Nazi officials remember World War One. Germany suffered a staggering and sudden loss, and yet they rose again.
Wow.
So why wouldn't they rise again after World War II?
Isn't that something? Man, wouldn't that have been crazy? That seems like there's so much that could be branched off of that if you wanted to figure out the trajectory of the world based on some of these events. And it's hard to believe it could come down to just a few people that can change all of the world events.
It really is. It's stunning and there are a lot of story threads in this book, The Hidden Nazi, but that's one of them, and it really is something to contemplate.
Author Dean Reuter, one last question for you. I know that when you're trying to go through a bunch of documents that seem unsorted, not a lot of organization. In fact, you may be the first person to look at some of these documents in the last half century. Do you find that when you're doing research for a book, it's nearly impossible to get off of the research stage. You just get so obsessed and you think, man, if I just keep looking one more day, I might find one other big thing. Because when you're uncovering things that haven't been uncovered in so long, it's almost like an obsession when you start looking these things up.
Obsession is a great word for that, Ryan. I mean, you have to be, you know, interested in the chase, interested in the hunt, a puzzle solver, somebody who gets the thrill of holding a document, as you say, in their hands for the first time in 70 years. One thing in addition, everything you said was correct, but one additional thing I found was that, you start doing this research and years later, you can go back and look at documents that you looked at the outset and have a whole new appreciation for them because of what you've learned in the interim. So you have to kind of double check everything. But one important thing I learned from a historian, a chaired historian at Harvard, he said, be careful because you'll know exactly what you know, but you don't know what's in the next box.
Yeah.
And you're right. You want to keep going. But at some point, you have to draw a line and say, okay, we've got our book. We've got enough material here. We've got to stop. And yet this book writing process, I mean, this book was available for pre-order on Amazon before it was finished writing because we kept, we got to put this in.
Yeah,
here's a new storyline. We got to put this in.
You couldn't help yourself.
Yeah.
Are you married?
I am.
Yeah. Did you end up giving daily reports every time you find something interesting to your wife?
Yeah, and my father. My father as well. My father was one of my most constant readers and encouragers. And my wife gave up vacations. I mean, we go on vacation together. Been to Europe a few times and up and down the all over the country interviewing people.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you ever watched that show House when it was on TV for Fox.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and you would laugh at it because it seems like the plot lines are exactly the same where you're like, okay, this happens and they fail, this happens, they fail. But then there's that little stroke of inspiration and that solves the entire case. You know what? It's amazing how sometimes you stumble upon the littlest things that break through some of the biggest revelations and how they can really help the research. And, I laugh at little things like that until you start to research things on your own and you realize that's kind of how it happens.
It really can. And I was blessed to have two researchers. And all of that then is based on hard work at the outset. You've got to keep going and going and going, and then you find the golden nugget.
Yeah. Okay. Amazon, you can find it on their local bookstores. The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil, author Dean Reuter. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about your book on KMOX.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Ryan.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. There's only so much we can talk about at any given time. There are so many different storylines that they cover. And if you are a World War II buff, you have to check out this book. This is Overnight America KMOX. Overnight America for just a couple more minutes. I'm on Twitter at Ryan Recker. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast by going to kmox.com/ONA and make it your favorite podcast app. Just click that subscribe button. Do it. Smash that subscribe button, as they say on YouTube. And the new start time, it's 8 o'clock starting tomorrow, Overnight America, going from 8 to midnight live, and then after midnight will be a replay. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's going to be weird to start at 8 o'clock, but it's going to feel good, and I'm really excited for it. I mean, it's going to be weird to be in the building the same time as other people are in the building. I mean, there's actual human beings as opposed to ghosts in the building that we occupy most of the time. So KMOX.com/ONA, that's still going to be the same place where you can listen to the show, and I'm really looking forward to spending a couple hours with you even earlier, starting at 8 o'clock. What I'm not looking forward to is driving on the interstates where there's actual people driving. I'm used to coming in when there's no one out. Now, going home, not going to be a big problem. I mean, there's still going to be pretty light traffic. But coming in, man, do I have to fight rush hour traffic to get into the studios? That's not looking forward to that one bit. Not even a little bit. So earlier this week, it's one of those sad moments that we had to face as a KMOX station, and that's the passing of our dear friend Brett Bloom. He passed away. His battle with cancer lasted for the good part of this year, and he fought and he fought and he fought. And you start to look back at some of the memories you have with Brett, and he used to do a lot of the overnight news. I would catch him when I would come into the studios and get a little pleasantries and get to say hi to him. I didn't really know him much on a personal level. I did have a great story with him about his traditions around Christmas time. And when he got sick, it was kind of a shock for everyone because, you know, you just don't, one day he's fine and then the next day, you know, he's no longer reporting. Kevin Killeen did a whole nother story on him. A lot of people have some pretty great memories of Brett.
KMOX executive producer Chris Myhill remembers Brett's puns.
The police in Forest Park who ride on the horses, apparently one of the horses was injured. And Brett was working on a story about the injured horse. And I went up to him. I said, well, Brett, how's the horse? And he says, he's in stable condition.
KMOX sports executive producer Ben Boyd remembers.
I'll tell you what, we ended up covering the same thing one time, and he went out of his way to help me. Like, I didn't even realize I would need help anyway, but he went out of his way to help me do what I was doing and couldn't have been nicer. And ever since then, like, every time I would see him, like, we'd say hi, where before that, I never really talked to him much.
Talk show host Mark Reardon.
Just a really good, solid news person, a reporter who took his job very seriously, and I never saw one ounce of bias in Brett Bloom. And I love talking movies with him. Really, that was fun because he had opinions. Every once in a while, we'd clash on an opinion, but for the most part, we had a good time just chatting about films.
Reporter, anchor, Maria Kina.
Those one-liners, you know, he was pretty quiet in the newsroom. We're all very vocal. And he'd be really quiet, and then all of a sudden, one of us would say something, and he'd come up with one of those one-liners.
KMOX news director Beth Coghlan saved a copy of Brett Bloom's hand-drawn newsroom ranking chart, which he would hand out to interns.
It's like a cutaway view of the ocean.
It is, and at the very top is a bright, shining star, and it says, Brett Bloom, your idol. And then just below that is a satellite and an average KMOX reporter. And then Kevin Killeen.
So we're going down the level.
We're going down levels here. And then when we get to the ocean, then there's a whale. Then there's whale dung. And below the whale dung is the intern. And he would give this to people when they first came into the newsroom. So, like, you know your place.
Anchor Carol Daniel remembers what Brett would say when he was trying to concentrate on writing and Carol was nearby talking to someone about new shoes or a recipe.
This so affects my life. And he'd be clapping. This so affects my life. And it was both an insult, a recognition that we were annoying him by having this personal conversation. He didn't really care, but he cared.
And he was working, typing the whole time.
He would never stop typing.
He typed like Ben-Hur's horses.
And he'd stop typing just to say, this so affects my life. Like, why are you guys talking about your stuff around me?
Religion and health editor Fred Bottomer remembers the Brett Bloom mystique.
I will remember Brett as being as big as a bear, but as gentle as a cub. I'll also remember him from always wearing those crisp white shirts with long dark ties. Another thing I will always remember is the way Brett always made a quiet exit from work at the end of the day.
And that was so true. We would look up and he was gone. Brett Bloom did not like to say goodbye. With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Aw. What an ending. Brett, we love you. I think his memorial is this weekend, and I get to say goodbye. That's another great whole nother story from Kevin Killeen, which you can find online, too, that we post those as part of the podcasts and KMOX.com. Just go to that section. Well, that about does it here for us at Overnight America with the Cardinals getting that big win today, the 10-inning win. I wore the Molina jersey into work, and I feel like it's been good luck. Every day that the Cardinals have won has been a day I've worn the jersey, so I may have to wear the jersey again on Wednesday, and I may just sleep with it on until then. The first pitch is going to be 4:02 Central, which means it's 5:02 Eastern if you're over on the East Coast, maybe listening to the games there on KMOX. 4:02 Central. It's in Atlanta, and Jack Flaherty's going to be on the mound for the Cardinals, and let's see if he can get that big win, one of his biggest, the biggest game of his career. And we saw the other games that are coming up. It means that if the Cardinals win, I think that would mean they play on Saturday, but one game at a time. You know, we don't want to look too far ahead. All I know is after Molina had that very, very exciting hit at the end of the game in the 10th inning, I don't know how you could go back to playing anything but excited. I mean, that just could have been the turning point for the Cardinals in the postseason, the thing that kicks them into high gear. I guess we're going to have to wait and find out on Wednesday. You're going to want to listen to it right here on KMOX. Enjoy the rest of your night. Again, if you want to listen to the podcast, KMOX.com/ONA is how you do it. It's absolutely free. We start at tomorrow, 8 o'clock, our very first show starting at 8. Hope you can join us. We'll see you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.